Yeah, racing's really funny. A bunch of people show up in Lycra. One person stands on the podium with a medal and everybody else goes home pissed. Most of the people that you're working with are not going to be number one. And if you're not going to be number one, you should really enjoy ripping at life. Do some different things and have some fun, because as I'm all working hard for goals, but if you're not loving what you're doing, man, switch it.
This is the PT Pinecast.
All right, show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Pumped to have this guy on the show. Jay Deshari is a physical therapist out in Bend, Oregon. He works with professional triathletes, age groupers, and yeah, even super slow people like me. Also an instructor on a few MedBridge courses around swimming, biking, and running in physical therapy. He's written a bunch of books, journal articles, and he's one of those guests I've been trying to get on the show for a long time, and finally, he's here. The first round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction, rehabilitation training, and the equipment you need to apply it. Find them online at owensrecoveryscience.com and their brand new podcast, the Owens Recovery Science Podcast, on iTunes and wherever podcasts are heard.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pinecast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Welcome to PT Pinecast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Excited to bring this next guest on the show, researcher, athletic performance optimization. He writes, he teaches critical thinking for clinicians, physical therapist with an international reputation as an expert in biomechanical analysis. Also as a director of the Speed Clinic at the University of Virginia, and now as the director of the Rep Biomechanics Lab in Bend, Oregon. He blurs the lines between clinical practice, coaching, and engineering to solve injury problems and optimize performance. Jay Deshari on the show. Jay, welcome to the program, man.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Good to be here.
You're my white whale.
A beluga whale, or what kind of whale? Gray whale?
So, started the show 2.5 years ago or so, and my batting practice was pretty good. If there was someone I really, really wanted to talk to, it's totally selfish. I use the fact that I have a podcast just to be able to be like, hey, I want to talk to that person. I want to ask them and probing some questions and get into some stuff. My professor gave me a book during my second year of PT school. It was Anatomy for Runners, and I'm reading it halfway through. I went to class and I was like, I can just hear this guy's like, I never heard you talk at the time and never saw a video or anything, but I was like, I can just hear how this guy like talks and writes. I'm like, I need to talk to this guy. So, tried some emails, whatever, and it wasn't going anywhere. And finally you're on the show now. And that's what I mean by the white whale, like Captain Ahab, Moby Dick, the white whale.
Well, it's great to be here, man. Thanks. Cool. I was not eluding you in the open seas.
Well, that's perfect. So hell of an intro. It's a really, really cool bio that you've been putting together, which is interesting to me because I am a terrible runner, but I like to run. And now this intersection of PT and just the things that you do are just very interesting to me. How'd you get into it? How'd you find your way to where you are here? What's the superhero backstory?
Yeah, I think I have the weirdest job in the whole world. And it's interesting as other PTs say, like, what do you do? Because it's very different. A quick second of backstory about me. I swam as a kid and was pretty fit and, you know, spent 20 to 25 hours a week in the pool every week. You know, you get a ton of fitness with that, right? You get a lot of cardiovascular development. And I was sort of pulled into running cross country and track from my high school. I was fit, right? Very fit and could run very fast. And then my body would just blow up. And that happened over and over again. And I had lots of knee pain, lots of shin splints, and everything else that, you know, people struggle with these days. And I'd go to, you know, talk to different folks. They'd say, oh, you should stop running because running's bad for you. And I was like, how is it that I can run 20, I can swim 25 hours a week and be fine, and yet running like 6 miles shuts me down for a week? And I just hated that answer of, you know, you can't do something. And so I think that kind of set me in a quest to kind of find a better way. So a lot of stuff happened. Ended up going to PT school at LSU. It was a great program and loved it. I had some great, very strong manual therapy oriented professors and learned a ton of good info. Went and worked my first job at University of Virginia Health South with two IFOMP fellows and learned
a
ton there.
Not a bad place to start, huh?
No, it was great. I'm very lucky in my career and it's a very collaborative environment over there. And again, some great colleagues to work with. And yeah, after a few years of doing stuff, I became really frustrated because the stuff I learned in PT school didn't work, you know? And, we were told all this stuff. And I think I had great assessment skills that I learned in school. But as far as interventions and things that, you know, we've been taught, you know, need to exist, it was like, well, wait a second, why are we doing this? Because I'm not seeing the results I want. And I think that led me to a different path. And so I was very lucky at the time. Dr. Casey Kerrigan came down from Harvard to chair the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehab and to start a gait lab at UVA. I basically went to her one day and said, hey, you know, I got this idea. You know, it's really cool. You just got a huge startup fund. We have probably the nicest lab in the whole North America continent. And it'd be really cool to keep doing research, but why can't we do some individual stuff with this? And she's like, keep talking. So, we got actually down a kind of rabbit hole of, you know, why can't we use all this, you know, fancy technological equipment we have for individual gait analysis, right? Why can't someone come in and we can actually see, you know, numbers that dictate, you know, are things really improving? You know, my big take home has always been, if you're going to make an intervention, show me objective proof it works, right? Show me a change in running economy. Show me a change in body stress. Like, what are you doing and is it making a difference? And I think that's like people talk about the Holy Grail. I've been doing it for over a decade, right? Wow. It's not the Holy Grail. We've already found it. We do it. And yeah, it's not easy. It's not cheap. But that method exists. So I think that's why I think that my career has been unique is that, you know, yes, I've done research, done a bunch of different, you know, peer-reviewed studies, and that's definitely guided a lot of what I do. And I always tell folks, you know, research should guide, your thought process, but should not dictate a treatment intervention. People are different, you know, and you know, what works, you know, people, you don't come see me and say, Jay, I want to become an average runner, right?
Right.
You say, I want to become better in, you know, steeplechase or, you know, ultras or, you know, Ironman or whatever, right? And so, and you bring a backlog as a patient as a bunch of history, right? Maybe you just were off the couch and got into running. Maybe you have, you know, 20 years of playing soccer behind you, right? Maybe, again, you were the swimmer. So it just depends on where you come from. And I think one of the biggest things I've learned over the years is not just how all this stuff we measure makes a difference in terms of research studies, but how you go back and correlate individual adaptations with the greater body of knowledge. And that's where I think my career has become unique and hopefully made an impact on some folks. So.
That's a cool backstory. And really the overarching theme I hear was you did something for a while, weren't happy with it. And instead of just bitching about it, you did something about it and you saw an opportunity when that lab popped up. And you said, I'm going to go through this door. And good on the people that were around you to say, keep talking. Okay, where are you going with this? And then allowing you to go down that road.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, and again, I always tell folks, like, my career is only possible because of the people I've worked with, right? I mean, I've got some tremendous colleagues I've worked with over the years and learned so much from. I work with a great team of biomedical engineers in the UVA lab, and I can't even comprehend how I could have learned that without them. I mean, it was great to have a meeting of the minds where, you know, it wasn't just, you know, people had different hats. Everybody had one hat to try and do a better job and work together, and it's just a great environment.
So talk about that. Who was in the room? You have biomechanists, because now you're not just a bunch of PTs in the room trying to solve a PT problem with a PT way. It's a bunch of people who are coming at it in different directions. I can imagine my head would start to spin in such a good way. And wow, you're coming at this from a thing I've never even thought of, but to you, it's commonplace. Who else was able to be in that room with you?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, we had, you know, physicians in there for sure, but the most of it was, you know, biomedical and mechanical engineers, right? And so it's funny, you know, we talk about, you know, from the clinical world, we talk about, oh, I kind of see this thing here. And don't you sort of feel this? And, you know, look at this and look at that. And, you know, and engineers are like, dude, it's data. Like it's a binary one or a zero. Which is it, right? And so it was really interesting because, you know, they think one way and clinicians think another way. And I think I've learned to sort of kind of, I guess, poach off both. But, you know, I think the idea is, when you see a change, why is it there? And, you know, again, can you quantify things? And if you can't quantify it, it's probably not really there, right? And so, and then again, from the engineering side, you know, they need to understand that people are not just passive blocks of material. You move around and bounce back and forth, right? They have brains, and, you know, your neuromuscular system dictates how you work, and trying to, you know, dictate or trying to identify, you know, what of the changes we see, right? Anything, you know, how much is mechanical, how much it's, you know, neuromuscular, how much it's, you know, some, you know, perception. So it's just, I think it's a great way to kind of get people, you know, working together. And I think that's the whole idea. I always tell folks, if you have engineering friends, man, pick their heads, because, you know, learn how to think like they do. And it definitely changes the way you approach problems.
Love that. That's a cool approach. What do you get to do now? Is it something similar? You went from UVA, and now you're out in Bend, Oregon at the Rett Biomechanics Lab. Is something similar now? Is same similar role?
Yeah. So we just, you know, lifestyle change. Want to try out the West Coast, so came to Bend, Oregon, and so we have a real research lab out here called Rett Lab, and it's the same idea, right? So and I'd say it's actually interesting because I still do some work with UVA. I still co-chair a conference over there called UVA Running Medicine. We do it every year, and I still do some research work with that group over there back at the Speed Lab there. And but yeah, so in the Rep Lab, we same idea, right? So it's looking at primarily endurance athletes. We do, I'd say 80% of my caseload is runners and cyclists, and then the 20% tends to be kind of just, you know, different athletes of all genres. A lot of skiers. We do a lot of work with US Ski and Snowboard, so. Cool. It's always fun to look at, you know, again, how can you, you know, either stave off injury, right? Or how do you, you know, look for that, you know, performance window, and how can you eke out that last, you know, 0.1% for those folks who are at the 0.1%, sure. Or how can you eke out the past 20% for folks who are newer, right? Yeah. So again, it's trying to meet somebody where they are.
I always say triathlon, and I'm a very amateur triathlete. I say triathlon's a sport that allows me to be mediocre at three things all in one day.
That's right.
So we have a mutual acquaintance, mutual friend, and she wanted me to make sure you talked about this. What is a Jaser size?
I know where that came from.
it came from a pretty damn good athlete.
Yep. Yeah, so this is my athlete, Lindsay Corbin. She kind of coined that term. So yeah, it's a funny story. I'll just go ahead and tell this, right? So it's kind of interesting. She was obviously a very successful triathlete for many years on the international stage, and she came and saw me. She was basically, and she doesn't mind me sharing the story. It's been out in public for a while, but basically, she came and saw me about 10 weeks before Ironman World Championships in Kona with a stress fracture, and said, "Hey, I've got an active stress fracture right now. I can't run, and I need to, you know, place top 10 in 10 weeks in Kona." A lot of people would go, "You must be smoking a nice big crack pipe." I wanted to say, okay, well, all right, let's think about, you know, physiology that we can do here, and what you can do training wise, we can't do training wise. And we basically, it was a really interesting progression, right? So we basically had to identify a bunch of clinical things, right? So obviously we had to treat, you know, a healing stress fracture as you would. You know, she had a tensile stress fracture, which was caused by instability problems. So we had to do a bunch of lower leg, you know, proprioception control work as we could with weight bearing tolerance. But what we were able to do is kind of look past just, you know, rehab this injury and look at combine that with how do you really make someone step up to the plate for race day. And so we basically used a bunch of principles of how you condition the body from a neuromuscular side and from a strength and conditioning side. And Lindsay's friends thought she was nuts. Her longest run prior to Kona that year, I think, was 9 miles.
Wow.
And she had to run a marathon, obviously. So it was not that well, that high up in the mileage scale. But not only did she run the marathon and finish Kona, she got 10th place. She got her goal of finishing top 10. I think she had like one of her, actually she had her PR marathon split for Kona. So the idea is, you know, we're able to systematically, you know, measure, assess, and quantify, you know, could she, you know, develop force? Could she, how fast could she produce force in terms of her muscle skill? And then we did a bunch of training in the pool and on the bike. But, you know, it's possible to kind of use science, right, to build a better athlete and prepare people better. And so I think that story got a lot of attention. I mean, her friends and competitors were, you know, resting and hanging out in the hotel room. And literally, Lindsay was PRing on squat and deadlift 3 days before Kona. You know, people are like, "What the hell are you doing?"
Right.
And she's like, "Well, we were trying something new." And, you know, we had to prepare a completely different approach going into that race because, you know, again, she wasn't able to sustain running volume, but paired her body to tolerate impact loads and tolerate, you know, force output for a long period of time and got some really incredible results. And so I think that, yeah, I think one of the big messages there, I think we just got out is, you know, that, and this is no secret that, you know, strength training and performance endurance training are not exclusive, right? They're, in fact, they're very much intertwined as far as what you can get if you combine them the right way, right?
Yeah. And Jazzercises are, she said, you just kind of, I don't know, I want you to be able to do this better. So you just made up exercises and you're like, all right, I guess this is a new exercise. What's it called? And you're like, I don't know. Just make up a name.
Yep. That's pretty much how we do it. Yeah. But again, it's the thing though, right? It's introducing athletes a novel skill, right? That, right. You know, endurance mentality is I'll just keep doing more of the same thing.
Right.
And that's not how you learn, right? You learn by exposing yourself to new skills and new behavior and not getting good at exercise, but getting good at a skill, which translates into your sport. And that's what all the Jazzercises are designed to do. It's to cue people to go, wow, this feels just like my sport, right?
Right.
And that's the whole idea.
Yeah. And just for background for the audience, the athlete we're talking about, pro triathlete Lindsey Corbin, just won Ironman Wisconsin just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Won Ironman Wisconsin and set a course record. I believe a bike split course record as well. Yeah. Yeah. Crushed it.
And so. I went and did that race a couple years ago. That was my first Ironman. I signed up because a buddy of mine was signing up. I really didn't pay attention. And I was like, well, it's the Midwest. It's flat. And just for background, Wisconsin is in fact not flat. So I found out the hard way.
Yeah. Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
Can't say thanks enough to our sponsors at Aureus Medical Group. They are the leaders in travel physical therapy staffing. Quite simply, they find physical therapists' jobs. Yes, that's what they do. I can't break it down any more than that. That's it. Do what you want to do, where you want to do it. I'm talking about placements in all 50 states. They've got you covered. The cold, the warm, the mountains, the beach, the rivers, the lakes, all 50 states. Yes, Alaska. Yes, Hawaii. Short-term placements, 13 weeks, or could that lead to a long-term placement? Whatever works for you. Just take a look. Get on a phone call with one of their recruiters. These guys know the ins and outs of travel physical therapy. What about continuing education credits? Licensing in different states. There's a jurisprudence exam. What does that mean? How do you get from one placement to the next? Should I look into travel PT as a new grad or is that too soon? They've got you covered. Yeah, Aureus is the expert in travel physical therapy. Take a look on the website and then talk to one of their experts. AureusMedical.com. That's Aureus Medical Group. AureusMedical.com.
And we're back.
Let's get back to the show.
Yeah.
Jay Deshari from the Rep Biomechanics Lab in Bend, Oregon on the show with us right now. Literally wrote the book on running, Gait Assessments, author of Running Rewired and Anatomy for Runners, the book I mentioned at the top of the show. How'd you decide to go into writing too? Because you're writing columns for magazines, you're publishing, you know, journals and book chapters, as we mentioned previously. How'd you jump into that? That's not an easy undertaking.
No, it's not. And so it's interesting, right? If you go to PT school, I think I had this idea that I got to school, I learned all the stuff I wanted to learn as an athlete. And I realized that, you know, you have a lot of stuff to learn just to pass boards and they don't have time to teach you the cool stuff you want to learn. It's interesting to me when I got out and I'm, you know, practicing for a bunch of years, still looking for, you know, resources and how to really implement and bridge that gap between what you learn and, you know, in school and what you need to do with your athletic population. And it didn't exist. And I got in the Gait Lab and started learning a ton of stuff. And people always said, you know, hey, what books can I read to learn more? And I'm like, well, you know, there's some great biomechanical textbooks and sure you can read, you know, your PT textbooks, but to blend those two, there really wasn't something that existed. And I felt there was a big hole there. So Anatomy for Runners still sits in a very weird spot in the reference column. It's written for athletes who are super savvy and want to dig in. It's not summer reading at all. That book is very technical. It's written for PTs who understand clinical thinking, but they don't understand how to apply that knowledge to an athletic population because, again, you don't learn this stuff in school.
Right.
And it's written for coaches because, you know, I mean, think about it. You have a question on, gee, coach, you know, how should I run? Which shoes should I be in? What's the first thing you do? You talk to your coach, right? And it just blew my mind. Unless you take my course with USA Track and Field, you don't get any true running biomechanics education. And it just blew my mind that, you know, these are the people who are being asked questions that yet have no resource. So that book sits in a weird spot, and but I think it kind of it tried to bring some worlds together and get people to kind of level off and say, look, let's all sit in the room together and see what we can glean off each other, and to try to bring in coaching biomechanics and clinical thought process to help people figure out, you know, hey, how do my knowledge nuggets I have in my brain, how does that really go back and distill what I should do for my patients, my athletes, and or myself if you're an individual. So yeah, that was that book. And then Running Rewired was definitely trying to take that knowledge and make it much more approachable, right? So that's much more consumer-friendly layman's terms. It's definitely still not, I would say, summer reading, but it's much more digestible. End of the day, people, you know, I said, you know, look, Anatomy for Runners was great, but I have a plan. And so people wanted the plan. They wanted the, you know, the five-step, do this, do that.
Walk me through it, yeah.
Yeah, and so Running Rewired is trying to be much more executable, right? So it's basically saying, look, here's some theory behind why you should pay attention to this. Here's why, you know, the old approach of grunt through it doesn't work. Here's some things to think about that do work. Here are the skills that you have not learned as an athlete, which you need to master, and here's how you train them.
Yeah.
And so it's a plan. I mean, you can literally read that book, go, huh, that's cool. And then you can literally just, there's a table in chapter 11 you look at and say, gee, when should I do this workout, that workout, and just hit go. It's a way to try and make things approachable.
Interesting how you mentioned where that weird place for Anatomy for Runners was. Now I'm thinking back to where I was in life and why I liked it so much, and good on my professor, Sky Donovan, for giving it to me. As a PT student, I was kind of in that weird world where, yeah, I'm a recreational runner, but now I kind of know some stuff because I'm in PT school, but I know I don't know everything, but I wanted to know a little more that I wasn't getting in the classroom. So yeah, I think that's a good explanation. Is if Anatomy for Runners is a great book for PT students or new grads who want a little more that they didn't get in school, and they don't want to go to a Con Ed course just yet.
Yeah, totally. Read, expose yourself to new things, right? And just trying to get as many different points of view as possible. That's the whole goal, and just trying to provide another tool to do that.
Yeah. You also, I teach some courses on MedBridge, a great platform that I just jumped onto. I took your Connecting the Dots, Clinician's Role in Endurance Sports Performance. That was a cool course, and you know, broke it down to real small stuff, and then went big and went wide of how you put it together. But you're also on there with running assessment, strength and power, footwear, bike anatomy, swim stroke analysis. So you put all these things, these courses on MedBridge together. You got yourself the beginning of a decent beginning understanding of how to work with those individual sports. And then if you could put it together with some coaching savvy, how to work with triathletes.
Yeah, my personal bias is, you know, you can obviously work with any patient, but if you're going to really make sure that your interventions are specific to their sport, you really need to understand that sport, right? Sure. And so, you know, we're all tasked with tons of runners, and obviously cyclists are, you know, out there in droves these days, and swimmers are less so, but triathlon's definitely booming. And so, you know, if you're going to base it there and work with somebody on you know, shoulder mechanics, one of my courses literally called Swimmers Aren't Pitchers, right? And so, yeah. You know, trying to break down, you know, in school, we talk a lot about pitching mechanics and throwing mechanics and, you know, overuse injuries in that aspect, but that's not the same thing as swimming. And so I try to take that model of things that I think people are familiar with and break it down into different terms to help people understand, you know, swimming is a closed chain sport, right? You're pulling over water and that needs to, you know, that changes a lot of dynamics, and your lower body is not something you drag along behind you. It's something that is very important. I coached high level sprinters, and just a fun nugget here, it always blows people's mind. I've coached some very, very elite master swimmers, and I could take some of the top master sprinters, and I could have them kick a 50 free within 5 to 6 seconds of their swim stroke.
How? How?
Well, it just because legs are important. And triathletes think you have to pull yourself through the water. And I always tell people, you know, your arms are an afterthought. I mean, your leg drive dictates your entire body position, right?
I need to look this up because, man, I just drag my feet pretty much.
Yeah, and that's what most people do, right? They kind of, I'm going to swim like a triathlete. It's like, no, you want to swim, you learn how to swim like a swimmer, right? And body position is the holy grail of swimming. So we talk about, you know, how you get good body position, right? The reason why your shoulders are overstressed is not because you're just your stroke mechanics look weird kinematically. It's because you don't know how to kick, right? Wow. And so how you sync your drive with your arms. And there's a bunch of things there. So anyway, it's just trying to, the same idea, right? Trying to build a continuum. And actually, we built a really nice certification program. So we've got everything from that Connecting the Dots course that kind of puts together all of triathlon triathlon. And then we have a bunch of courses, like you said, on running and on swim mechanics, and then even on queuing. So you get, the whole idea there is to, you know, if a patient brings in a video of them swimming, you can actually break it down, right? I actually made this swim assessment tool you can go through and help you kind of, again, take your knowledge and go, okay, here's where some things are off where they should be and why is this here, to help you think and organize your thought process. And then we have a whole bike fit curriculum there as well. So, you know, I think one of the big things I try and do is, you know, help you talk to your patients and help your patients talk to your local bike retailer and help you talk to your bike retailer, right? There's lots of parts and technology in bikes these days. And I don't think you need to be a master of all of them, but you need to understand how those contact points relate to the body. And then more importantly, how, you know, it's not just moving saddles and handlebars around, but taking time to look at how you sit in a bike. I mean, I do bike fits for a huge part of my clinical practice. And I spend just as much time teaching people how to sit on a bike properly and how to, you know, have proper, you know, core engagement, pelvic mechanics, et cetera, as I do just moving parts around. And I think that's where people start to notice, wow, like I actually feel something different versus just, oh, he adjusted my saddle and that's nice, right? So yeah, it's trying to get that whole brain-body connection and you know, rewire their brain to feel something different and maintain that position for, you know, a 50-meter sprint or a 50K trail run or an Ironman triathlon.
That's cool. Available now, as we mentioned, on MedBridge platform, all of those. And I just cherry-picked and mentioned a couple of those courses. Jay actually has more than that. If you're interested, and MedBridge, a great platform, you can take it anywhere. There's an app. It's, you know, it's an online platform. Get all your CEUs taken care of, and you get to kind of, you know, peek in on some really, really great instructors where you might have to travel super far to get to some of these people. That's removed with the barrier. MedBridge takes that away. So check those out.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
Like craft beer for your ears.
This is the PT Pinecast.
Hey guys, Maestro here, and I want to personally invite you to Rockstock 2018, the movement experience of the year. Join us in sunny Miami Beach, Florida on October 27th and 28th for movement, laughter, dancing, music, fun, and yes, you will get CEUs. The lineup is absolute fire, including yours truly and your girl, Dr. Court Conley. So head on over to rocktape.com, use the code PTPintcasters18 to save yourself some money. I'll see you there.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
On the show, Jay Deshar right now from Bend, Oregon. Something we might have never found out about you, even if we put a private investigator on you. You got to drag Julia Roberts down the street during a movie shoot. What does that mean?
Yeah, years ago, I was in high school, and my drama teachers was a, she was kind of networked in the movie world, and she basically said, hey, anybody want to be extras in a movie shoot? And so my friends and I were like, sure, we'll go do it. Anybody's ever done a movie shoot, it's hilarious. You basically sit around and basically eat and drink all day and get paid to do nothing. And they basically pull you out of a crowd. We're in the French Quarter at like 2 a.m. and they shut down a bunch of the streets around Bourbon Street. We're down there, and all of a sudden they call out some numbers. We step up and the director comes over. He's like, hey, so you guys are going to meet somebody. We'll go through this and we'll take some takes. And we're like, cool. We're just standing there, and Julia Roberts walks out. We're like, and she's like, hey, my name's Julia. Nice to meet you. We're like, weren't expecting that.
Oh man.
And the director's like, yeah, we're going to shoot a scene. This is for a movie called Pelican Brief. And so, yeah, she's like, yep, this needs to look real. You know, and so the director's calling out numbers like, hey, you two, I need you to basically come by. I need you to elbow Julia Roberts really hard in the shoulder. And Julia comes out and like, look, don't make this look dainty. This needs to look real. So two of my friends practice like elbowing Julia Roberts. And then, you know, like, okay, so you two, and pointed to me and my friend, basically come over, and I need you to, you know, grab Julia's arms and basically drag her down the street. And so we practice her like literally kicking and writhing back behind us, and we drug her down the street. So yeah, not something that happens every day.
Did it make it the final cut or what?
No, it did not. The scene of her getting kind of just, you know, muscled around, the crowd isn't there for sure. But yeah, that's the other thing. It's shocking how much you shoot that's not in there. Yeah. There's like 10 scenes we shot that were hilariously just odd that didn't make it in there. Yeah. But yeah, it was a fun night.
Pelican Brief, though, decent sized movie from the air. I mean, that's a legit flick.
That's what spawned my whole career, Jimmy. It's made me worldwide.
Yeah, it's so huge. I mean, that you put that on your resume, MedBridge calls tomorrow and says, we need courses. What do you got? I don't care if you have any clinical assessment skills, but you got to elbow Julia Roberts. You're good to go. We do a segment on the show called Three Questions. Are you ready, Jay?
I'm ready.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
It's brought to you by our sponsors, Arias Medical Staffing. They find physical therapist jobs all across the country, from Louisiana to Virginia to Bend, Oregon, anywhere. Those all 50 states, all settings, short-term, long-term. Let them know what you want to do, and you can do what you want to do where you want to do it. AureusMedical.com. First question is, if you could go anywhere in the U.S. that you haven't been a PT for 13 weeks, carte blanche, where do you go?
Man, this is one of those things where you're giving away some secret spots in the world, but I'll do it. Bellingham, Washington.
Yeah. What do you like there?
Man, it is a beautiful, amazing place, and it's one of the most awesome communities. There's great, hardworking folks there who are super invested in, like, love their local resources and work hard to make that place special. I'm a huge mountain biker. There's a ton of progressive trail building out there. I mean, the place is just flat out gorgeous, beautiful. I mean, the scenery is amazing. It's rad. I can't speak highly enough about that place.
Got a pretty good burrito joint in that town too, Casa Que Pasa, with a potato burrito that will literally knock your socks off. It's a hell of a burrito.
Yeah.
Second question is, what's something that you read that really inspired you that you think other people should read too?
Wow. I think Laird Hamilton's book. What's the name? I think it's called Laird. Yeah, called Laird. It was just an interesting point of view. I think it just, he had some interesting points there in how he lives his lifestyle. And I think that some of the things he got across was, I think he had one quote in there that I still love. Is like, you know, everybody I know who rips does something to scare themselves a little bit just every day. And, you know, I think that kind of resonates with me. It's like, I think we get complacent in society. And I think that trying to push yourself in some capacity of athleticism or work or whatever, you know, stokes your boat. But I think that something to get you off the couch and makes you excited is important every day. I think we get too complacent. We need something to push us and smile a big.
Yeah, if you think about it, you do that. You scared yourself multiple times a day when you were a kid, and we slowly but surely we stopped doing that.
Totally. I think that's a big thing. As I tell folks, you know, we as a society need to do more different stuff and do different stuff more. And you know, it's playing with my kids the other day, and I'm like, I was like, okay, we're gonna start doing challenges. My daughter and I both have pogo sticks. And so I was like, all right, we're doing pogo stick challenge. Like, literally, she knocked off 1,000 jumps, right? Like, just
wow.
And it's just hilarious to do different things, right? And so we started saying, okay, the weekly challenge this week is gonna be this and that. And I built this little, like, you know, climbing course in the backyard for the kids to screw around on. So it's just fun to do different things. And I think that, you know, again, we think that we do that as a kid, and then we get older and it's like, oh, I just do this. And I give myself a name as a skier or as a mountain biker or as a triathlete, whatever. And you take that label and you think you have to be great at that. And, you know, it's like, it's not. And you mentioned Lindsay. It's funny. Lindsay put some post up a while ago and I loved it. It was like, she said, yeah, racing's really funny. A bunch of people show up and like, or one person stands on the podium with a medal and everybody else goes home pissed. And I love that. It's like, most of the people that you're working with are not going to be number one. And if you're not going to be number one, you should really enjoy ripping at life, right? Like, do some different things and have some fun, because, you know, I'm all, you know, working hard for goals, but if you're not loving what you're doing, man, switch it.
You know, I've done a bunch of tries, and again, never really aiming at the podium. I always tell people I want to finish vertical. I want to be standing up when I finish. Yeah. That's my goal. But I always say too, like, you know, there's nothing at the end of a triathlon. There's nothing special unless you enjoy the ride. Then the end is a celebration of everything you just were able to accomplish. But winning, I don't know, for me, maybe because I was never really that close. But yeah, enjoy that ride, or else you're missing it.
Yeah, totally. All right. Yeah, I love what you're doing.
Third question is a chance for you to name drop. Who is someone the audience should know more about? Maybe someone who does some great work, but is flying under the radar.
Eric Magrum. He's a PT I worked with at UVA for a while, over a decade, and he co-chaired that course with Dr. Bob Wilder. The guy is amazing. I learned my entire approach from him as far as how I look at clinical thought process. He's absolutely unbelievable. He's not in social media at all.
Smart.
Yeah, he does run an orthopedic residency at EVA. He's amazing and extraordinarily talented. He's a great teacher. He's a great person, great father. One of the best clinicians I know, period.
Love it. All right, you're off the hot seat. That's three questions from Arias Medical Staffing. Again, anywhere you want to go, Bellingham, definitely a spot you should check out. But I like how you're trying to keep it under wraps. You don't want too many people showing up to ruin it, right?
Right.
three questions brought to you by Arias Medical Staffing. That's AureusMedical.com. Short-term, long-term placements, new grads, they got you covered with Arias Medical Staffing. Last thing we do on the program is your parting shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation, their mission to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
What's one last sentiment you'd want to leave with the audience before you go? Something like a mic drop moment.
Mic drop, man. You know, go big. I think that, you know, we try and shortchange ourselves and kind of get through the day, whatever it's going to be, and like find out some big goal you want to do, whether it be for a day or for a career or for, for a vacation, whatever. Go big. I think life's too short to kind of dink around and do little things. And, sometimes little things can add up to a big thing. But yeah, dream big and go big, and don't settle for just like doing one thing. I think we lose sight of that as a profession, as a person, right? And as an athlete, I think that, yeah. Try and find that pro you want to hit and smile when you get there.
Jay Deshari of the Rep Lab at Rebound PT in Bend, Oregon. Appreciate finally getting you on the show, and you did not disappoint, my man. Loved having you on the program.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. It's great to be here.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Be a leader in advancing patient outcomes with APTA's Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry. You can leverage your EHR data to benchmark outcomes without added data entry. That's right, there's no additional work. You'll be able to optimize your practice with easy-to-use reports, market your practice to patients, payers, and referring physicians, and maximize payment. It's the only nationwide registry building integrations for PT practices, regardless of what EHR you have. Sign up for a demo now at ptoutcomes.com/go.
That's ptoutcomes.com/go.
The Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry, brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association. Our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
From the makers of this podcast comes a brand new show. It's called NPTE StudyCast. If you're studying for the NPTE, this is the show you need to listen to,
period.
Short, sweet, and to-the-point episodes from board-certified clinical specialists and physical therapy professors on all the topics you need to know to take the NPTE. NPTE StudyCast, available now on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
NPTE StudyCast.
The number one NPTE podcast
in the world.